Welcome into the Rutgers Scoutcast episode 85, the episode that almost didn't happen. So I am the host of the Rutgers Scoutcast, Sam Hellman, and as much as I wanted to bag it this week and celebrate Thanksgiving, we decided to put together an episode. So I hope everyone enjoys what Brian and I were able to put together this week on short notice. Both of us very busy with the holidays, and not only that, but three Rutgers basketball games in a 7-day period, plus everything going on with the football team and wrestling on the roll. There hasn't been a lot of time to really plan out and do some detailed podcasting. So hopefully everyone has had a good Thanksgiving. You're either listening to this on the night of Thanksgiving if you're insane, or later in the week as they prepare or react to the Michigan State game on Saturday. If you don't listen this week, I'm not offended. I get it. People have better stuff to do over the Thanksgiving weekend than listen to people talk about Rutgers and a struggling football team. With that said, if you are listening and you're enjoying it, you like the show, want it to keep going, please toss us a review in Apple Podcasts. It's the best way to help people find the show, to help expand the show. And, you know, there's other Rutgers podcasts out there now. I'm not the only one doing it weekly. So hopefully you continue to choose us and give us those friendly reviews. We appreciate it. We try to keep the shtick to a minimum and actually talk about football and basketball and analyze things on this instead of joking around too much. But we have fun as well, and you're going to hear that this week. So the format of the show this week first is going to be a conversation with Kamoko Touré, the defensive end whose career has just ended or is about to end at Rutgers, depending on when you're listening to this. Like I've explained in some past episodes, the interview segments are a little bit shorter right now just because there are more restrictions on the amount of one-on-one time we can get with how busy the Rutgers football schedule is right now. So hopefully you enjoy the time that I spent with Kamoko. I think it's about a 5-minute conversation. I love that kid. He's so much fun. Been covering him for a while, and I know there's those grandiose expectations. Oh, let's see if Kamoko can be a first-team all-conference player this year. And that didn't work out, but I would argue that he had a very good season and that what you don't see on the stat sheet or in sacks this year doesn't matter if you're an NFL scout or coach that puts on the film, because the testing numbers have always been there, and now you've seen that Touré can do a little bit more than just put his hand in the dirt and run at the quarterback. Hopefully it all works out for him. You're going to hear from Kamoko in just a second talking about that. Then Brian Doan joins us for a little bit to chat about this week in Rutgers and maybe some recruiting stuff. We'll see how that conversation goes. And then after that, closing out the show this week, if you're a hardcore fan, you're a Scarlet Report follower, you've probably already seen this video of Jerry Kill. But his answer, I love Jerry Kill, man. He's hilarious. And he just goes on these like 5-minute diatribes that have nothing to do with the questions that were asked, and I love that. So what I'm going to do after Brian comes on the show, instead of closing things out the traditional way, I'm going to play about 6 or 7 minutes of Jerry Kill audio from his press conference this week. Everything that you hear from Jerry Kill speaking came from literally 2 questions. He just goes and goes and goes until he's done talking and gives a ton of information. Everything from him coming back next year to his health to everything that's gone wrong with Rutgers to if he regrets not redshirting some of the freshmen on offense to Jonathan Lewis to what really went wrong against Indiana. I thought he was a little more blunt about it than Coach Chris Ash was. All of that stuff is covered in this 7-minute segment, and it's funny because all of it was based on me asking him a question that he didn't answer. I asked him something like, hey, Coach, how much can it help these guys to have you and the offensive staff back for a second year? Because this Rutgers offense has never had the same coordinator for 2 years in a row. And he answers it quickly, but then he moves on to 17 other things that were more interesting. So I hope you enjoy listening to that. There is some background noise with the typing and stuff. That, again, guys, it's a press conference. People type. There's nothing I can do about that. But hopefully you enjoy listening to Jerry Kill as we close out the show and really get ready for a winter with National Signing Day and all that stuff. Enough of this palaver. Let's get this show on the road. Here's Kamoko Touré. Kamoko, how much more do you know about football than that kid that was running around at Behringer?
So I can reflect on the kid that didn't know nothing. I know a lot more. and still learning to know more. And if I get, and still wanting to get opportunity, you know, to go to the league and still get the things that football, that a lot of pass rusher knows that I don't know yet, because I know I don't know a lot. Like, it's going to be a different level, probably teach different techniques and different stuff, and how they see things. It's just like everywhere I go, like my freshman year, I didn't know a lot. I just know how to pass rush. Came here, was learning first and second down and pass rushing, and learning the difference between O lineman, D tackle, and then to the dual formation and stuff like that. I'm learning stuff like that. I'm still learning, and I see it. And then, as you can see, like me playing first and second down, seeing that I actually improved from being just a third down player, now being a first and second down player, and also going to the next level. I feel like I'm gonna learn more, and it's still a lot to learn.
I remember when you were a junior, Coach Mangan said, "Hey, you should go watch this guy at Rutgers camp." And then Rutgers offered you, you're committed, you blew up out of nowhere. What do you remember about that camp and really when you realized you could play college football?
I remember I was doing one-on-ones and Coach Flood was watching me. And I was kind of scared and I was curious and seeing what they thought of me and stuff like that. But my coach just kept telling me to just use your athleticism and everything's going to work out and then everything's going to plan out. So I just constantly just kept doing what I was told to do. And then Coach Ash, you know, pulled me over. I mean, Coach Flood pulled me over and, you know, spoke to me and said he wanted to offer me a full scholarship, which I was really shocked. And I talked to him one-on-one. It was official right then and there. And that's when I knew right then and there that I could do something special if I just constantly, you know, just keep on learning.
How cool has that aspect been for you? I mean, you got to show the kids out of Behringer, out of Newark Central and everywhere could make it here, and now I know you have so much family that's trying to do the same thing with Lance and Muhammad and the other Muhammad.
I realized that ever since I started playing football, I impacted so many people in my family lives, and then cousins, friends, and people that, you know, haven't seen this coming at all. And I'm happy that I kind of changed some people's life. Even my little brothers that lives in Georgia playing football because of me. My little brother Lance that playing for Irvington playing football, and my cousins and stuff like that. So it's I'm happy that just by me not being physically there around them, that I could just be in a role model to them and stuff like that. And hopefully, and many more to the next level, I could continue to do that.
And what's your favorite part of Rutgers University?
Everything. Like, learned a lot. Time management, practice. It's just different from everybody else. Probably different from different. It's just different. It's hard. And prepare you for the league. A lot of people that came out of here are doing good, that came from free agency and stuff like that, are still in the league because of what they came out of Rutgers. After Sunday, I'm just going to go straight to, take a little couple of days off, you know, rest my body and stuff like that. But also, I'm still training a little bit. I'm not going to put too much stress into my body. But also, you know, and start to make decisions on where I want to train at and stuff like that. But also, just try to keep fit or go to the sauna and just taking care of my body and just icing a lot, you know, getting ready and try to get healthy until January next year so that I could get ready for the NFLPA. So getting better, strong shoulders, you know, still need to get stronger and stuff like that. And I got to keep on working and just, you know, you can never actually relax, you know, you just got to keep working. So once you relax, you know, it start to fatigue, your body start to like lose muscle mass and stuff like that. So I just going to keep exercising little things. It don't have to be something major to, you know, to put wear and tear in my body, but just something, you know, just keep on energizing myself and get ready.
Awesome. Thanks, Marco. Appreciate it, man. All right, so we have a lot planned for this week's show. Now joined by Brian Doan, National Recruiting Analyst for CBS. Brian, happy Thanksgiving as this drops. Thanksgiving night. I'm sure that you're very well fed and some nice vegan options at your Thanksgiving.
I'm probably asleep right now.
Yeah, I mean, this drops at about 6 p.m., so hopefully...
I'm on my second nap.
Yeah.
Don't wake me up.
Fair enough. Well, the thing that I want to talk about this week, I don't think that there's any need for us to, again, go back and explain what happened to Indiana, because I don't think there's any interest in people listening to that. And so what I want to do first
is... just change quarterbacks.
You're right. Yeah. Why didn't we try Zach Allen?
Correct.
Well, speaking of Zach Allen, part of the thing I want to talk about this week, I want to talk about there's just this strange uproar surrounding the number of scholarships Rutgers has. However much or little you follow the program, Rutgers has 22 scholarships available this year, and that is because Rutgers has taken kids in 2017. Those kids are leveraged against the 2018 class, basically, and that's part of the grad transfer decision that Rutgers has made, right? And so people don't understand, refuse to acknowledge the whole 22 number.
When I'm talking about it, can I just say ditto?
Exactly. Yeah, you just transform it into whatever you want. But the reason I bring it up is because Rutgers brought in a ton of grad transfers this year, and not all of that goes into the leveraging against the future class thing, but it did play a role, specifically with Kyle Bolin at quarterback. And I think that what I want to talk about, and I asked Chris Ash about this on Tuesday, was what did you get from these guys off the field? Because, yeah, you can say Kyle Bolin was a bust, that Zach Allen was a bust, that Ross Douglas has underperformed at linebacker or whatever. You can say that, and it's a perfectly legitimate argument, but a lot of these guys were not busts in the locker room, and that's where you talk about the whole revamping a culture that needs a lot of help.
Sam, this must be your holiday gift to me.
Letting you talk about number of scholarships and grad transfers?
I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to put it in these terms. I think it was on this podcast a few moons back where I referenced I covered UCLA, and they had a kid, a JUCO kid. They brought in like six JUCOs one year, which you don't really do at UCLA very much.
So are we at the point now where we're going to retell UCLA stories? Like, are we already out of them?
Well, for the people, the new ones.
Okay.
Dan Nelson, linebacker. Everybody said, oh, he barely even plays, doesn't do much. Why do you have him on the team? It's just a wasted scholarship. Well, as it turned out, former Marine, I want to say he was in, I can't remember because I remember doing this story. I can't remember if he was in Afghanistan. Whatever, he was a former Marine. And he brought toughness, which you would think a Marine would bring, and leadership to the locker room. And he turned out to be a special teams player, and that was it. And I remember one game he broke his collarbone because his shoulder pad got shattered when he was trying to bust a wedge when you could have wedges. When you're talking about changing culture, you're talking about Damon Mitchell coming and knowing how to work hard and how to watch film. Kyle Bolin, yeah, maybe he didn't play well on the field, but perhaps he taught Jonathan Lewis how to watch film and take notes because he watched Lamar Jackson do it. And Gus Edwards turned out to be a good player. And so you get that from him. Ross Douglas, he came from Michigan.
Right.
And the way they watched film there and went through everything there. So I think when you're talking about a program that's trying to remake its image, when you're trying to change the culture inside the locker room, everybody looks at what happens on the field and the results in good or bad. And there's so much more that goes into it that you can't even imagine. You know, every team has their glue guys, and maybe some of these guys turned out to be glue guys, which is key to transition from having a bad locker room into having a better locker room.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys that have come in and clearly improved their stock. You know, Gus Edwards went from Miami, where he wouldn't be playing on this Miami team right now.
He'd be playing, just not a lot.
Right.
Not as much as Rutgers.
He'd be playing as much as Josh Hicks is playing this year for Rutgers. So, before the injury.
I actually think he'd be playing more, but I understand your point.
Okay. Well, my point is that...
I think he'd be a short yardage guy and you know, something like that.
At Rutgers, he could be a feature back, and he's now legitimately on an NFL radar because of what he's done at Rutgers.
Correct.
You have that. You have a guy like Damon Mitchell who wanted to prove he could be a special teams player, a wide receiver, to get a look at the NFL. I don't think that part of it worked out. But what Damon Mitchell has gotten to do, and Gus Edwards has gotten to do, is they get to go spend a year in college where they're also with their children. They both have kids that they wanted to be with, and they get to do that now that they're both less than an hour away from home. Then you have guys like Andrew Hart, the kicker, who walked on. But not only is he probably the best place kicker Rutgers has had since, what would you say, Santee? Most reliable.
Yeah.
But he came specifically to, because he's close with Jerry Kill and Jerry Kill's wife. They're all very close. And he wanted to get an in into the New York business.
He's going to go get a job next semester in New York because of his grad school at Rutgers. You have Ross Douglas, who's always wanted to be a coach, and now he's learned from Harbaugh, Ash, Jerry Kill. He's learned from some pretty good coaches about what it takes and if he really wants to do it. So maybe they didn't all become NFL players.
If he came a year earlier, he could have learned what not to do.
Well, he was here last year.
2 years ago, I mean.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he could have learned a lot from that. My point is that I know that everyone is going to say, I can't believe that we can't sign, I don't know, name your obscure three-star kid that Rutgers isn't really recruiting. I can't believe we signed this kid. We can't sign him because of Kyle Bolin. He barely played for us, and he threw 6 interceptions and whatever you want to say about him. But what you don't see unless you talk to Chris Ash or talk to Jonathan Lewis, if he were allowed to talk, or if you talk to, you know, parents or anyone around the program, which you don't see.
Can we just check Jonathan Lewis's dad's Twitter?
We probably could. There's some good stuff on there. From what I understand, he's ready to go for Michigan State. You talk to these people and you can see that they're teaching younger guys what it takes, and the leadership at Rutgers, a lot of those players didn't really ever get it.
Oh, you were in athletics when you said leadership at Rutgers. I thought that was an oxymoron, but we're talking athletics, so okay.
Well, I mean, you know, it's all about freedom of speech. While, like, look at the Rutgers seniors, okay? Look at guys like Miles Nash, like Robert Martin, like Kamoko Touré. What does Chris Ash always say about these guys is, well, they finally bought in. They're working great this year. That they're bought into the program, and they're doing it the right way this time. But that means for the first 3 or 4 years, they weren't doing it the right way.
I think everybody recognizes that.
But do you want them passing on the wrong things they learned to the next generation, or do you want Ross Douglas to come in and say, hey, here's how Jim Harbaugh did it. By the way, you know, he brought the 49ers to the Super Bowl. He knows about coaching and what it takes. I think that's where grad transfers paid off, despite the fact that Rutgers will be a little limited come December signing day.
Here's the biggest issue. Everybody wants the results now. And while they're happy when something takes place, 6 months later, they forget why it was done. I mean, the big one was, Jeff Bagwell who was traded from the Red Sox to the Astros way back when? And everybody says it's the worst deal, but it got the Red Sox to the playoffs as they were chasing a World Series title. It's stuff like that. You got to look at things as they are when it happens, and you can't say what if later on. The point is, this is a 4 to 5 year rebuild, and I've said it 6 zillion times. I've said that more than I've told UCLA stories, and people don't want to listen to it. And are they better than they were last year? Yes. Should they be better next year than they are this year? Yes. It doesn't mean the program's healthy. It doesn't mean everything's fine. It is a rebuild. And when you sit there and you map out your plan for a rebuild and everybody says, well, why are you taking 2 quarterbacks here? Let's take 2 quarterbacks there. Let's take an extra wide receiver here. Well, that's great. And then you look at what happened to the wide receiver depth the year Rutgers took 0, right? And if you want to take all these guys, you look at how they're trying to space out their secondary depth. Instead of just going and getting 6 kids because 6 kids got kicked out the year before Ash got there, you have to space things out for the overall long-term health of the roster. And people just don't want to listen to that. They don't want to believe it. They want to win. And here's what's going to happen. They're going to listen right now and go, oh, yeah, that does make sense. Yes, he's right. And then on Saturday when something happens that they don't like in the game, they're going to go on the board and say, we need to get this guy now. Forget about depth and building a roster. We can't survive until with next year unless we get this guy. It's a 4 or 5 year plan. Just sit back and enjoy the rebuild and enjoy that they're getting better. And then when they make their bowl game in whatever year, you can say, oh, remember what it was like sitting at that 79-0 game.
Something I want to bring up real quick because now it is out in public. We reported this late last week that Solomon Manning was leaving the program. He's going to go play at Monmouth, probably, you know, the level at which he could be making an impact right now. But congrats to Monmouth, by the way, for making the FCS playoff. My guy Lonnie Moore down there is one of the star players. But I guess just on Solomon Manning, it wasn't working out. He moved positions a couple times and couldn't find the field, so he moved on. It's normal. And then that does not mean that Rutgers can say, oh, well, he was on scholarship, so now we get 24 kids we can bring in. Let's get another grad transfer. No.
It doesn't? How come?
I promise it doesn't work like
really?
That.
Really? Why? I'm surprised at that.
Kids are going to leave. And
Solomon Manning's a kid that committed to Kyle Flood. I don't think a lot of people on staff wanted to take him. They were surprised because there was concern about how well he ran. When Chris Ash came in, there was talk on whether they would take him or not. We know what high school he's from. We know what the history is at that high school with Rutgers.
Right, right.
And so Chris Ash was going to take him and give him every opportunity. I couldn't even remember he was on the roster halfway through the season. So when I heard that you told me he was transferring, I was like, oh, that's right, he's here. So, I mean, yeah, it's what he should do. It's where he should have been at the first place.
Yeah, that's true. But again, I don't blame Solomon Manning for accepting a scholarship to Rutgers.
No, because keep in mind, he almost accepted one to Syracuse, but at the time they were looking elsewhere. So then he turned around and committed to Kyle Flood.
Right, and, you know, good for him. He got to try big-time football, and now he gets to take the lessons that he learned at Rutgers and go down to Monmouth and say, hey, this is what I learned in the Big Ten. Let's try to get back to the FCS playoff next year with my guy Lonnie Moore.
Yeah, good for Solomon Manning, because at the end of the day, if you want to play football, go there, get a degree that'll help you. If you're going to stay in New Jersey, your Monmouth degree will help you. I mean, you always want to see kids do well. People always go, oh, Brian, you don't like this guy. You don't like this guy. What did he ever do to you?
Well, you don't like them.
No, I love them. I mean, as people, Solomon Manning's a great kid.
Oh, yeah, Solomon's great, but there are players you don't like.
Well, I mean, how could you like it? I mean, that goes for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 120 players on a team. Of course there's players you don't. I mean, you're just not going to mesh with people's personality. But
what about Gio?
I love Gio. Gio's a great kid. And everybody I talk to tell me what a phenomenal kid he is. I mean, that has nothing to do with whether a kid can play football or not. So for me, with Solomon Manning, yeah, go get your degree. Go have fun playing football. So when you decide, you know, so when you hang him up, you had your chance.
All right, last thing that I want to bring up today on the podcast before we transition into the Jerry Kill conversation that I discussed earlier. Brian, part of doing this job is the fact that we don't really get holidays and holiday weekends. Our holiday weekends are in the middle of July for no reason.
Well, I'll just tell you this. One of my favorite things, and when I say favorite, I mean least favorite, is I'll go somewhere on a Friday and I'll be talking to somebody and they'll be like, oh, I'm so glad. You excited for the weekend? Get some, you know, excited for the weekend? Yeah, that's it. That's it. And there really are no days off in this thing. Thanksgiving, I know I'll try to take the day off, and if something happens, I'll work. And I love it. I've been doing it for 30 years working in, you know, sports. It's awesome. I mean, Sam, where else can you and I hang out on a midweek afternoon, enjoy a coffee?
Well, one of us got coffee.
Talk sports, and it's our job, and it's a great job. But you're right. You don't get days off. I remember covering the Dodgers when a story broke on Christmas Day. Here's your options. You work because it's your job, or you don't work. So there's pitfalls with everything.
My favorite. I haven't done this as long. Obviously, I've been doing it for 10. This is 10 years for me. My 11th year at Rutgers, I guess, if you want to do the math. The best.
That's a lot of incompetence.
Yeah. Well, 4 ADs, 3 football coaches.
How many presidents?
Yeah, unfortunately, not as many as
there needed to be.
Yes. But with all of that, the memory that stands out for me is when I was, I think it was my junior year. It was the year that Steve Kragthorpe got fired at Louisville. Rutgers was at Louisville 11 a.m. on Black Friday, which meant that me, being a student that lived in the dorms...
I was at that game.
It was great, right? But so
before, they did take us to a good... The Louisville Sports Information staff took us
Rutgers
to a really
was pretty
good,
great.
Awesome dude.
I wasn't invited.
Took us to a restaurant for Thanksgiving night, which was pretty cool.
So, but I'm guessing when you flew out probably, what, Thanksgiving to go to the game?
Thanksgiving night.
Yeah, I flew out Thanksgiving night as well, but... The Rutgers dorms are not open then, so I had the choice of either hiding in my dorm closet with the lights off and hoping they didn't catch me, or paying for a hotel that I couldn't afford, because I'm not going to drive to Virginia.
Why couldn't you hide in a hotel room closet?
Well, that would be illegal. So what I did, if you're familiar with...
creepiness?
Yeah, oh, well, no, if... If you're familiar with the quad on College Ave, I lived in, man, I can't even remember the name of the dorm, but I legitimately hid in my closet during, like, the check to make sure everyone was out. They turn off the electricity and the water, and I'm just there hiding for 12 hours before my flight because I have nowhere else to go. Then I fly there on Thanksgiving, have Thanksgiving dinner with my photographer at Waffle House because that's what was open. Hey, I still remember.
Hey, we went to a place, too, and it wasn't Waffle House.
Yeah, yeah, well, it must be nice to have money and be an adult. I didn't have either. And then we got to watch Mohamed Sanu play quarterback, and that was the payoff. Yeah. We got to watch one of the most fun, absurd games of Shiano's era. And, I mean, Cragthorpe got fired right after that game. He was going to get fired anyway. But it ended up being a fun weekend despite all that nonsense. And that's the one that I'll always remember about Thanksgiving.
Boy, there's so many. I'll give you my best Thanksgiving. My older one was just about a year old, and geez, I guess it was the year that Rutgers had that big run in football, 05, right? That was 05?
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not.
Yeah, it was 05. It all runs together, man.
Well, you know that the big run was 06, right?
06. That's when it was. It was 06 because he was almost a year old. So UCLA football played at Arizona State on a Saturday, which I think is the same day that Cincinnati tattooed Rutgers. Game ended. I did my job. Got on a plane Sunday. Flew to Honolulu. Met my wife and almost one-year-old there in the airport at Honolulu. We hopped on a flight over to Maui. I covered the Maui Invitational because UCLA was playing in the Maui Invitational. And my paper was nice enough to allow us to stay through Saturday night and pay for it. So I guess it would be now 10 years ago or 11 years ago this Thanksgiving that we had Thanksgiving dinner poolside, probably about 100 feet from the ocean in Maui, and it was absolutely gorgeous. It was at the Westin, which was one of the team hotels that they gave us an unbelievable rate. So it was great.
Yeah, and for every Maui Invitational, there's 10 Birmingham Papa John's Bowl during Christmas week. So it's not all volcanoes and beaches. Thanks to Brian for giving us a little bit of time during the holiday week as we all prepare for Thanksgiving, for a ton of sports going on this weekend. If you hear a little buzz in the background as I record the transition into Jerry Kill, it's because I am at my dungeon office at Rutgers University in the bowels of High Point Solutions Stadium, and the refrigerator is running. I can't go catch it right now because my dinner's in there and I don't want it to spoil. So a quick question here in a, I guess we'll call it a truncated mailbag. Brian and I didn't have enough time to do a full mailbag this week. So the question that I'm going to take quickly here came from Piscataway Fred, who is on our Scarlet Report premium site. He doesn't post a lot, but sent me a message with some questions, something that I wanted to discuss today, because if I didn't add it into the mailbag this week, I would have forgotten. His question is regarding fan support and fan behavior. He asks, when is it appropriate to call out a fan base for being weak or front runners or fair weather fans, and who should do it for maximum positive effect? So it's an interesting question, I guess. I think that Rutgers fans are quick to call each other out or call out the fan base that they're a part of and criticize each other, and I think that's part of being a fan of any team in New Jersey is the self-deprecating humor that comes with it. Rutgers is no different. I mean, I'm sure that you see all the bad Twitter shtick about the Devils and the Jets and the Mets and all that stuff, so why shouldn't Rutgers be any different with bad Twitter shtick and fan bases that love to yell at each other? That's what the New York fan base is all about. As far as who should call out the fan base, I don't think you ever need to call out a fan base because the attendance numbers kind of speak for themselves. Now, as a writer, the only time we used to have a joke at the Daily Targum. I'd make fun of my boss, Matt Stein, because he'd write a column every week in the Targum taking shots at the student section for not showing up quickly enough or for not being there or for the fans just not turning out or whatever it is. And it became a running joke because, yeah, you can yell at fans as much as they want, but what's a fan going to do? Is he going to read that and go,
oh, well, I'll show those newspapers. I'm going to go buy four tickets. I'll show them. No, they're just going to add to the Twitter jokes or throw a middle finger up and walk away. The only time that I've ever called out the Rutgers fan base in my 11 years is when Mike Teal got booed on homecoming. I thought that was ridiculous. A guy that was such an integral part of 2006, and believe me, they won the game where he got booed. It was a 12-10 win over UConn. Blair Bynes made a big play to lock it up. That was the one time where I felt like I needed to criticize the fan base, because why are you booing this guy? It's funny every time a quarterback gets booed and you hear the fan base say, we weren't booing the kid, we were booing the decision to play him. Yeah, well, the kid knows you're booing him, and that's your right as a fan. And tickets are expensive, and I have no right to tell you how to act. Rutgers and the players and the team have no right to tell you how to act. You're fans, and you act however you want. And when Rutgers wins and is in the headlines for the right reasons and is outgoing and the marketing team is all over the place, more people are going to come. It has nothing to do with calling out the fan base or having, you know, the players rip the fans. I always think that that's not going to work. If Chris Ash calls out the fans after Saturday when none of them inevitably show up for Michigan State, that's a problem. If Sebastian Joseph or one of the team captains or something says, yeah, I'm disappointed in the fans for not coming for my senior day, that creates the wrong headline. I don't think there's really ever a right time to call out a fan base unless it's something egregious. If you're talking about attendance, if you're talking about coming out or buying tickets or whatever, that takes care of itself. If you're talking about decorum, and you know, everyone talked about how Rutgers fans acted in that first night game against Penn State, or how Rutgers fans were treated at Penn State the next year, all that kind of stuff, I get that. But that's, you know, like you wrote in the question, Fred, decorum, that's different. And I think that's probably, whether it's the media or the fan base itself, you need to police yourself. And it's the same thing I always say on the message boards. Think about if you were looking the person in the eye saying what you just typed behind a keyboard. It's the same idea in the fan. It's the same idea if you're a fan. Think about if you're saying these things or booing or whatever you're doing 5 feet from the person you're doing it to. It's no different. Thanks for the question. I hope Dad answered it. That was all we're doing for the mailbag this week. And instead of me leaving, hearing Jerry Kill, coming back to close out the show, begging you to subscribe and rate in iTunes, and begging you to help support the Rutgers Scoutcast on social media. See what I did there? I'm just going to go ahead and play this Jerry Kill audio that we teased. So here's Jerry Kill talking about, well, talking about whatever the hell Jerry Kill wants to talk about. And that is the show for this week. Thanks for listening. Coach, these players haven't had the same offensive coordinator for 2 years in a long time. How much can that help a player in development just to know that same guy, same philosophy, same scheme going into their offseason?
Oh, I think it's, you know, I mean, that's, you know, continuity. I was fortunate to have the same people for most of them for 16 to 20 years. And I think continuity when you're turning around a program is very, very important. And I think that, you know, because you can keep the same philosophy, the same thing. And, you know, this is, like I said, I've done this five different times, and this isn't any different than the other five. You know, we have the same questions about quarterback, have the same questions about, you know, you just do. And but, you know, really in some ways, this is Coach Ash's year number one, because when you take the job over late and recruiting and so forth, it's tough. But, you know, we've made some progress. I mean, I think that's evident in some areas. We just haven't got everything fixed yet, and that only comes through recruiting, frankly, and continuity. And you know, I know I've enjoyed my room tremendously, and I got great kids. I mean, they, you know, you could have had a problem when I went to Gio as a quarterback, and you know, we had none. Kyle was very supportive and has been right in there the whole time. Jonathan got hurt. He's been supportive, you know, and understands. And so, you know, I'm fortunate to have a great room and so forth. And I think in the past that the quarterback been, we got two more hopefully coming in. Can't talk about that, but is that it's a deal where I came in with one, you know, really one and a half. because the other one was injured too. Two of them were injured. And so it's one of those deals where, you know, nobody's patient. I'm the most impatient guy in the world, except for maybe Coach Ash. And so we all want to win right now. And but it just doesn't work that way. It's a process. It's like a, I always say it's like a broken down company, and you buy a company. And you know, I spoke all over the country when I was out, and to companies, and referring it towards football. If you have a company that's not successful, and somebody, you know, else buys it, and it hadn't been successful, you're not going to turn that company around in 2 years. And this job wouldn't have been open if it was a great job at the time. You know, most of the time they're open because there's issues, and a lot of them. So you just can't take care of them all at once. So I think that getting three Big Ten wins, it was important, and we need to get a fourth one. Why we played the way we did against Indiana, I can't answer that question. I asked all five quarterbacks that yesterday, and we talked about it. Maybe it's because we haven't been in that position before. I don't know. But we just didn't play like we've been playing. And even in the loss at Penn State, I felt we played hard and did some good things. But can't do anything about that. I'm one that says when it's like the NFL or any place else, NBA basketball, you know, when that day's over, it's over with. You look at the video, you make corrections, and you move on, because if you worry about it too much, you get your butt beat the next time. So, you know, I think my whole deal is that we're playing the seventh-ranked rushing team in the country. We're playing another good, really good defense. Is that we play better and we execute, because my frustrations right now are, it's not that, you know, we run the ball for six, and then we run it for four, and then we complete a pass, we get a first down, and then we go into what we call a speed huddle, and a guy jumps off sides. All right, there goes one first down. Then we do it again later on in the game, and a guy holds in a short yardage situation. Then we have a snap that goes sideways, or we take quarterback, we blow protection, and quarterback takes a blind shot. I mean, and we're moving the ball on all of them. And so it's one of those things where we just still have one or two people that are struggling for a snap, and it just kills us. And I've talked about consistency all year about that, and I think that's part of the transition and probably not having coordinators. And I think Gio's been through about five of them. I told Gio, I don't know if he's 28 or 30 years old. He's been here a long time, but it's a deal where he knows more about it than anybody. And maybe that's why. But we just the frustration is consistency. And then I look at it. I'm not an excuse maker, but all of a sudden I look out there and we got three freshman receivers, and I look how young we are on offense, and maybe that's why we don't have the continuity, because sometimes young people don't concentrate near as well as older people do. And I'm an old man. I'm a lot older than anybody really on the staff, and I think my concentration level towards my focus is better than an 18-year-old kid that's playing in front of a crowd and so forth. So as long as we maintain a good attitude and we play hard and try to get better, I can live with anything. But I don't, at Indiana, it was just, I felt offensively we had one of our better practices. I thought we, if you went by practice, I felt pretty good. And I was in the box, but according to our guys, I think they got up so fast, and emotionally our kids didn't respond. I don't know what Coach Ash told you, but they got on us so quick, and I think our kids were like in culture shock. And that's a sign of a team that haven't been there. Maybe they're nervous because they were playing a chance to go to, have a chance to go to a bowl game, and they just haven't been used to that for a while. So those are the million-dollar questions. You get them answered, let me know and send it to me. I'll take it. I'll listen too. I'm not afraid to listen.